Good evening. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy weighed in late this evening on his decision to give Fox's Tucker Carlson first dibs on footage from January 6. Footage which so far Tucker Carlson has used to portray the Capitol attack as something it was not. The Speaker's remarks come on a day that saw several Republican senators criticize his decision and hard on the heels of last night's document dump in Dominion voting systems cased against Fox. Documents revealing that Carlson's contempt for the former president, for his viewers, and for the facts. We'll have more on that shortly. First, though, some of what the speaker just said.
The one thing I always want to make sure is this Capitol is protected and secured. I want to make sure the officers here have everything they need to provide that. My whole role for January 6th is just to bring transparency. People can make their own decision of that.
Well, that's not all he said on the subject. Armando Raju found out when he pressed the speaker. He joins us now. So McCarthy held this press conference today following a Congressional Budget Office report on the debt. What did he say about the January 6th security footage? And how much concern, I mean, are you hearing from members of the House? Because members of the Senate have spoken out, but it doesn't sound like a lot of House members are Republicans.
Yeah, a lot of House members are aligning themselves with Kevin McCarthy. There are some who are concerned about Tucker Carlson's portrayal of the events. And one of the people who is concerned about this is the Capitol Police Chief, who said in a memo yesterday that it was offensive, it was misleading, it cherry-picked Tucker Carlson, the way he had portrayed that footage from the Speaker of the House. That also was what Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell aligned himself with, that he was also concerned about its portrayal, about what happened, how serious the violence was when Tucker Carlson claimed, based on this footage that he got from the Kevin McCarthy, that it was a mostly peaceful day. So that's why I asked Kevin McCarthy at this press conference about whether or not he agreed with Carlson's portrayal that it was a mostly peaceful day, and the speaker was combative.
The Capitol Police Chief and the Senate Republican Leader both raised concerns about the footage that you gave to Tucker Carlson, the way he portrayed it. He portrayed it as a mostly peaceful day. Do you have concerns with that portrayal?
You know, you asked the same question yesterday, and let me walk you back through that. The Capitol Police Chief, we went to them and asked, is there any clips in the process of where you see, tell us any warnings? He only had one, and we cleared it up. Lo and behold, Swalwell had already put that clip out on the internet for the last year and a half. I'm not sure if you asked, based upon any of those, about what you did with CNN. When CNN told where the leaders were taken, a secret place where they told us we couldn't even tell people. I know, and I'm answering your question. You can ask whatever question you want, but I have the right to answer your question. I'm answering his question, thank you. When CNN told the American public that we were at Fort McNair, I don't know if we can go back there. I don't think that's even changed. But you have now told your network, the entire world, where we go. I didn't hear one question from your network either when you would know when subpoenas were released before anybody else. I didn't know that your network got upset when you sat in Statuary Hall, when nobody else networks got anything. And I'm not sure your network got upset either when you had the Speaker of the House daughter do a documentary filming where we are in a secure place, walking through this when people weren't supposed to know. So now you're upset that we allowed somebody else just to have transparency.
The Capitol Police was able to see it.
And you know what the Capitol Police told us too? Is that January 6th committee never asked them. So I thank you for your question.
Mono, before we go on, I do think it's important to address some of what he said, because a lot of that is just red herrings. His statements about Fort McNair and Speaker Pelosi's daughter was in reference to a documentary by Alexander Pelosi, who is a noted documentarian. We aired portions of that broadcast on CNN. Capitol Police saw every piece of footage that we aired in order to make sure it didn't raise security concerns. As for CNN knowing of when subpoenas were going to be released before anyone else, we have some really good reporters who did stuff, who found that out and you know, staked out areas and saw people coming and going from courthouses. And as for his comment about Statuary Hall, we can only guess it was a reference to interviews that Jake Tapper and I did with lawmakers there on the one-year anniversary of January 6th, which we did from Statuary Hall because we were invited to. There's nothing secret about what we were doing there. So now that we've dispensed with that, what are lawmakers saying today about this?
Yeah, I mean, we're hearing some more concerns from members. You mentioned some House members who mostly had been aligning themselves with the Speaker of the House. There are some concerns from House members. One of them, Dan Newhouse of Washington State, told me that he is concerned about this revisionist history. I heard that also from Senator Mitt Romney, who told me that any effort by a news organization to try and portray what happened here was anything other than a vile and disgusting attack on our democracy is outrageous. But you're seeing some very close allies to Kevin McCarthy take a bit of a different approach. In fact, they are planning to press ahead with their own investigation into January 6th going forward, but not about Donald Trump's role or about what was uncovered by the January 6th Select Committee in the Democratic-led Congress, but to actually look at what the Democratic Select Committee did in and of itself. Barry Loudermilk, who is the chairman of a subcommittee here in the House, told me that he plans to look into the January 6th committee investigators themselves and look into any holes in their investigation. It's not entirely clear what that means, though, Anderson, but that is going to be a focus here. And Anderson, Kevin McCarthy did not want to make January 6th a focus in this new Congress, but by his recent moves, he effectively has.
Yeah. Manoraj, appreciate it. Thanks. Joining us now, two former members of the House January 6th Committee, California Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff and former Illinois Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger, now a CNN senior political commentator. Congressman Kinzinger, obviously Tucker Carlson is getting ratings and notoriety out of these tapes. What does Speaker McCarthy get out of this other than setting up a scenario where elected Republicans will, I guess, be forced to relitigate January 6th heading into an election year? Is this all just about appeasing the more extreme elements of the party?
Oh, yeah. This is, by the way, hey, Adam Sr., little inside joke. But this is all about trying to win over Tucker Carlson, trying to win over the base. I think knowing, obviously, that they're going to look into this January 6th committee, they want to take hold of the narrative, take hold of the narrative themselves. Look, what they're trying to do is nuts. And what they're trying to do is only to appeal to 30%, to the base of the Republican Party. They're obviously losing the 70% who know that this was exactly what it was. But I'll tell you this much, knowing what I know about Speaker McCarthy, he's going to be in meetings from here out with every member of Congress, showing them personally Tucker Carlson's phone and phone number and how he's good buddies now.
Congressman Schiff, I mean, as we heard in the back and forth over the security footage, Speaker McCarthy claimed the Capitol Police said the January 6th committee never asked them. Is that true? Do you know?
As far as I know, that's just plain false. And I'm not surprised that, you know, we would hear another falsehood out of Kevin McCarthy. In particular, I think the police chief in that two-page letter to the members of the department taking issue with how the events were being misrepresented by Tucker Carlson said there was no effort to get their input. And even when that was available to them. So, you know, I think McCarthy's getting a lot of flack, as he should be, for compromising the security of the Capitol, compromising our escape routes, compromising where security officers are posted, giving the material to someone in Tucker Carlson who we see in the Dominion litigation basically privately was acknowledging the truth about the election and publicly was lying about it. And when others were truthful, took issue and wanted to get them fired because it would hurt the profits of Fox. So this is who Kim McCarthy has decided to trust this security footage with. And he's done exactly what was expected, and that is misrepresented and in an effort to, as Adam was saying, appease the base, but also apparently meet commitments he made in order to get the speakership to the most extreme elements of his conference.
Congressman Kinzinger, it is, I mean, just extraordinary when you think about what Carlson is doing about rewriting history and, you know, on this incredibly important day on January 6th and what happened on that day, and this whole move among more extreme wings or elements in the Republican Party, especially in the House, to sort of make the people who committed crimes on that day and are serving time because of that, make them into some sort of political prisoners and you know, QAnon followers as if they are some sort of heroes.
Yeah, I mean, it's nuts. It's really, I mean, I look at this and I say, you know, what's the end game here? You know, what is it that they actually want to do? I think it's just day by day. How do we win primaries? How do we make the base happy? How do we get that bigger and bigger dopamine hit? And you see what Tucker Carlson does. He takes any, I mean, I could take footage from World War II and find like a little piece of that and convince somebody it's the moon landing, because you can find anything.
I thought about, look at like Vietnam, you know, there's plenty of footage of Marines and soldiers at their bases, you know, hanging out in Saigon, you know, in off time. I mean, you can take video of anybody in the course of a day when something is not happening. And then if you can't say that the Vietnam War wasn't violent and people weren't getting killed, I mean, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And look, the whole thing is he's disparaging law enforcement, too. I mean, keep in mind, the Republicans say, hey, we want January 6th to go away. It's time to move on. It's time to go forward. That's when the facts are coming out and it makes them look bad. Now they're trying to rewrite that narrative for the 30%, and they're holding on to it. Look, Tucker Carlson disparaging law enforcement. I want to make a point, and they're, you know, most of these cops will say 20, 30, 40 years old. When Tucker was in his 20s and 30s, like, this is what he was doing. He was out there wearing a bow tie, you know, talking, writing stories, and he's disparaging these people that have taken an oath to defend the Constitution, to defend the House, to defend the Senate, and to defend America. How dare him, especially in light of the fact that he knows better, and you can see that on the text messages.
He's also changed. I mean, there was a moment when he saw the writing on the wall, and he saw he needed to revamp his career. He was trying to do some stuff that, you know, he sensed in the Republican Party they didn't like, and he followed the crowd. And I mean, that is what the path he is on, and it's become, I guess, very profitable for him. I'm sure he has a big contract. I'm sure he's, you know, doing very well. But it's extraordinary the way he has shifted. Congressman Schiff, when Speaker McCarthy rejected your appointment to serve on the House Intelligence Committee in the current Congress, he sent a letter to Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries that, quote, "I cannot put partisan loyalty ahead of national security." Is there any other way to look at what he's done with Tucker Carlson?
No, there isn't. There isn't. You know, plainly in giving over surveillance video to someone who would do exactly what Adam is describing, and that is use it to try to rewrite history, to denigrate the law enforcement that day. McCarthy knew exactly what he was doing, and it had nothing to do with the institution or interests of our democracy. It only had to do with appeasing the most extreme elements of his conference and placating the base and fundraising. That's all that Kevin McCarthy is. What is most remarkable to me, Anderson, is the American people saw what happened that day. You can't ignore those images. And yet the power of repetition is such that, you know, people like Tucker Carlson, who know they're lying to the public, can convince tens of millions of people of those lies. I tell you, it's been really illuminating to me about other periods of history where you had other liars use a powerful megaphone and convince millions that they can't believe what they've seen. And you wonder, how is that possible? And now we see how that's possible. When you have people who have no love of country, no patriotic fiber, when it's just all about the money, then this is what happens. And for Tucker Carlson, through his many iterations, he's no different than Rupert Murdoch. It's all about the money and nothing else really matters.
Congressman Schiff, Adam Kinzinger, I appreciate your time. We're now on the Dominion documents that we've been following and what they revealed, the new ones about the sharp divide between what Fox's Tucker Carlson and others were saying in private versus what he was saying on the air. Details now from CNN's Bryn Gingras.
Reporters hate Trump with an all-consuming mania. They hate him so intensely that at times it's been amusing to watch.
You can apparently count Tucker Carlson among them. "I hate him passionately," Carlson wrote about the former president in a text to a staff member. "And there really isn't an upside to Trump," Carlson wrote in another message just 2 days before rioters stormed the U.S. Capitol. On air, Carlson told his viewers something different. Something very different.
"What happened today will be used by the people taking power to justify stripping you of the rights you were born with as an American."
All while in other text messages calling Trump in the aftermath of January 6th a demonic force, a destroyer, adding, "He is not going to destroy us." In 2020, right after election night, Carlson lamented this to his viewers.
"What happened last night could not have been worse for this country, for our children, for our grandchildren, for our future."
But messages Carlson sent to his producer show he couldn't wait for the 4 years to be over. We are very, very close to being able to ignore Trump most nights. I truly can't wait. Days after Trump tweeted he'd skip President Biden's inauguration, Carlson privately called the move destructive. On his show, he focused on questioning the legitimacy of the election results.
72 million voters believe this election was fundamentally unfair, and they're right about that.
Carlson's thoughts on how the Trump camp handled election fraud also in stark contrast to what he continued to push on air.
The outcome of our presidential election was seized from the hands of voters, where, of course, it rightly belongs.
And yet, the conservative host admitted privately, Trump needs to concede. There wasn't enough fraud to change the outcome. He's starting to do real damage to the party. That while he welcomed guests who spread election fraud conspiracies like Mike Lindell, Rudy Giuliani, and attorney Sidney Powell, who Carlson disparaged behind closed doors, calling Powell dangerous as hell. Sidney Powell is lying, by the way. I caught her. It's insane, he texts to Laura Ingraham. Carlson didn't respond to multiple requests for comment from CNN, but in a statement about the latest filing, Fox News accused Dominion of smearing the network, quote, to twist and even misattribute quotes to the highest levels of our company is truly beyond the pale.
That was Bryn Gingras reporting. It's hard to twist calling the president, former president, a demonic force and saying I hate him passionately. Another batch of documents arrived late this evening in that lawsuit brought by Dominion against Fox. That's breaking news. We'll bring you all the details on that next. And later, what a CNN investigation reveals about the red flags in the background of a Louisiana police officer who shot and killed an unarmed black man. As we mentioned before the break, more court filings in Dominion voting systems v. Fox News just came out. In them, Dominion accuses Fox of taking, quote, license to knowingly spread lies. And the right-wing channel claiming the lawsuit is, quote, unprecedented assault on the First Amendment. With me here tonight, CNN senior media reporter Oliver Darcy, also Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, senior associate dean for leadership studies at Yale University School of Management, and veteran First Amendment attorney Lee Levine, who we always point out has represented both Fox and CNN and many other media companies. What are you learning, Oliver, from these latest files?
These are the last, basically, legal filings that we really expect, the last major ones before a judge rules on motions for summary judgment, which is basically these both sides, Fox and Dominion, are asking a judge to rule in their favor before this goes to a jury trial. And so, as you said, Dominion is saying that Fox is in its filing asking for a license to lie, and Fox is saying this lawsuit represents an assault on the First Amendment. Dominion, of course, has said that Fox knows the truth about what happened in the 2020 election and is saying that if Fox cared about the truth that it now acknowledges, Fox would have its top personalities reporting that truth to its audience today, if not for Dominion's sake, then for the sake of a significant percentage of Americans who still wrongly believe the 2020 election was stolen, including so many of Fox's own loyal viewers who heard it over and over again on Fox's airwaves. Of course, Anderson, I wouldn't hold my breath on that one. Yeah. In fact, Tucker Carlson continues till this week to sow doubt about the 2020 election.
Yeah. Lee, what do you make of the contrast that we're seeing between what Fox hosts were saying in private compared to what they were saying on the air? From a legal standpoint, in terms of this case, does that matter?
It matters with respect to Carlson and with respect to Hannity, because their shows are among those that are being challenged in the lawsuit. So their state of mind with respect to truth or falsity at particular times, for instance, when Mike Lindell came on Carlson's show, is definitely relevant. With respect to others like Laura Ingraham, who has had none of her programs sued about, it's less relevant.
And Professor Sonnenfeld, I want to get your reaction to some of what we learned last night about what Rupert Murdoch thought about the lies that Fox hosts were repeating on the air. Repeatedly, Dominion lawyers asked things like, do you believe that Dominion was engaged in a massive coordinated effort to steal the 2020 presidential election? Murdoch says no. Have you ever seen any credible evidence to suggest Dominion was engaged in a massive coordinated effort to steal the 2020 presidential election? Murdoch says no. In your opinion, Professor, what kind of jeopardy does that open the Fox parent company up to?
I think enormous jeopardy. We have problems with these three anchors, that are four anchors, but two in particular, as Lee's pointed out. But we have a big problem with this board of directors, and particularly four or five members of this board have already, especially Rupert Murdoch himself, who's created his own Foxenstein monster that he can't control, is that he doesn't believe what they're saying. and both he, Lachlan Murdoch, his son, of course, Paul Ryan on the board, Anna Diaz, and of all blood-curdling things, William Burke, who's the CEO, the managing partner of a major law firm, Quinn Emanuel, on that board, did nothing to show the minimum duty of loyalty to the 60% owners, that they're allowing them to destroy the value of this brand by putting out this false news and putting them in jeopardy. And what this shows, as Oliver said, as it continues even tonight, putting out false information, that there's no contrition. So in addition to, you know, I leave it to Lee as to whether or not this is a slam dunk case as a non-lawyer. I don't see how they lose this case at $1.6 billion. But the punitives here, because they're continuing putting out what they know to be false, have got to be sky high, not to mention the derivative lawsuit from the 60% shareholders that have seen this value destruction. There's nothing like it. This is way worse than Pulitzer and Hearst in creating the Spanish-American War by misstating who sunk the Maine. We have a precedent for this, and this is its own new precedent.
Lee, when Fox makes the argument that this is a strike against the First Amendment, what do you make of that argument as somebody who, you know, fights for the First Amendment?
I'm not persuaded by it. If anything, I think it's quite the opposite. It shows that in a democracy, we value truth. And we like to give wide berth to speakers so that, so long as they're operating in good faith, if they happen to inadvertently or even negligently publish a falsehood, they're still protected by the First Amendment. But what the First Amendment does not protect is the deliberate falsehood, the knowing lie. And if a plaintiff can, like Dominion, can prove that Fox deliberately lied or deliberately broadcast things that it knew to be probably false, and it can prove that by clear and convincing evidence, then that speech is not protected by the First Amendment, and that is well-settled law.
And Lee, the fact that that Dominion was very early on and repeatedly sending emails to every producer, every on-air person, executives at Fox News with facts counterbalancing what they were actually reporting on the air, how significant is that?
It's enormously significant. I was struck by reading the filings today that the kinds of proof that plaintiffs typically rely on in usually opposing a summary judgment motion brought by a media entity like Fox, the circumstantial evidence that shows that there was actual malice. In this brief today, the discussion of that kind of evidence begins on page 75 of an 86-page brief. The prior 75 pages talks about things that are unique to this case, the kinds of evidence of actual malice, including the fact that Fox was put on notice by Dominion for weeks at a time, virtually every day, with information sheets showing that what had just gone on their air was false. Often when Fox would rebroadcast the same programs later in the day. That kind of stuff you don't usually see in defamation cases. And there's such a wealth of it in this case that it almost takes your breath away.
Yeah. Oliver Darcy, Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, Lee Levine, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Up next, the Department of Justice finds explicit bias and a pattern of discriminatory treatment of residents by the Louisville Metro Police Department in a review launched after the botched raid that killed Breonna Taylor. What her mom is saying about the report ahead. And a CNN investigation is the police officer in Shreveport, Louisiana, charged in a deadly shooting, an unarmed black man. What was found in his personnel files is raising a lot of questions tonight. The Department of Justice today released a scathing 86-page report on the Louisville Metro Police Department. The report was prompted by the 2020 fatal police shooting of Breonna Taylor, who was killed during a botched raid at her apartment using a no-knock warrant. The two-year investigation found a long list of problems, including routine use of excessive force and what they called an aggressive style of policing against black people, and included some officers who have called black people monkeys, animal, and boy. Also, the department has unlawfully executed search warrants. Breonna Taylor's mother calls today's report heartbreaking. She also says it's a, quote, indicator that Breonna's death is not in vain. Meanwhile, we have an investigation tonight into a police officer in another city charged with negligent homicide in a shooting of an unarmed black man. CNN's Ryan Young joins us now with that. What more can you tell us?
Anderson, sometimes when you go to these cities after these shootings, people start standing up to give you information. It was some police officer on the Shreveport Police Department that told us that we should look into a personnel file for Alexander Tyler. They said we should look into this because there are members of the community who have been upset that he's still on the force.
Shreveport Police, what's your emergency?
Just before 11 p.m. on February 3rd, a 911 domestic disturbance call turns into a deadly foot chase. Officer Alexander Tyler runs after 43-year-old Alonzo Bagley after he jumped from a second-floor apartment balcony.
He went that way, Todd.
About 5 seconds later.
Oh, no! Oh, gosh! You shot me. Oh, no.
Dispatch, send EMS right now. Shots fired. Shots fired.
For the next 2 minutes, the officers plead with Mr. Bagley to keep breathing.
Stay with me.
Mr. Bagley stops breathing, dying a short time later at the hospital. The Louisiana State Police took over the investigation into the shooting and recommended involuntary homicide charges against Tyler, who fired the shot. The 23-year-old is currently out on bond and paid administrative leave from the department. In early February, CNN asked the Shreveport Police Chief Wayne Smith if Officer Tyler had prior disciplinary issues.
Disciplinary-wise, I would not say he has been a disciplinary issue, or at least not to the point where things would rise on our radar.
But the officer's personnel file tells a different story. CNN obtained more than 450 pages, as well as 9 videos and 4 audio files of Officer Tyler's employment record with the Shreveport Police Department through an open records request. In that, one letter of commendation in April of 2022. But in just 21 months on the job, Officer Tyler has already served 30 days of suspension and previously faced 3 disciplinary events. Do you think Officer Tyler should still be on the police force?
Absolutely not. Officer Tyler should not have been on the police force the day he killed our client, Alonzo Bagley. I think we've seen an officer that has an intentional, reckless behavior.
Among those disciplinary events?
Get on the ground. Don't move. Arms out.
In March 2022, a woman complained that Tyler and 6 officers illegally detained minors and questioned them without adults present, also while searching a house without a warrant. Shreveport Police Department cleared Tyler and the other officers of wrongdoing in that case. In July 2022, Shreveport Police Internal Affairs wanted to know more about this video, showing Tyler's patrol car exceeding speeds of 130 miles per hour. Tyler says he tried pulling over a car for a modified exhaust, a minor traffic violation. The personnel file notes he did not have a description of the suspects, and Tyler didn't know what he was chasing. As part of the department's investigation into Tyler's handling of the incident, he was interviewed by Internal Affairs.
So it was basically a smooth pursuit. It was just excessive, a little excessive.
Way too fast. Gotcha. Yeah.
The department found that Tyler violated department policy during that pursuit. And then there's this. 1 month after the pursuit, investigators say officers were racing each other for fun when this happened.
Hey, you need to get over here pretty quick, Sarge.
You can see a bloody, groggy Officer Tyler being helped from his patrol car. He lays flat, and then another officer comes over to help him. According to investigators, Officer Tyler was driving his patrol car at 60 miles per hour in a 35 mile per hour zone. He hit a car nearly head on. 2 passengers and Tyler had to be taken to the hospital. During the review, investigators determined he and 2 other officers misused their radar guns to clock each other's speeds while racing down the road, an accusation they all denied to Internal Affairs. Tyler was suspended for 15 days. His attorney doesn't believe these past incidents should have any impact on the present case.
It's an unfortunate situation for the Bagley family. It's an unfortunate situation for Officer Tyler. It's an unfortunate situation for the city of Shreveport and the police department.
City activists and the Bagley family attorney believe more oversight is needed to keep eyes on this small police department amid violent crime concerns.
They absolutely have dropped the ball as it relates to discipline and trying to curtail this behavior.
And Ryan, I understand you have some details showing that Mr. Bagley, who was shot and killed, had a prior incident with the police.
Yeah, that's something that we've been talking to people in this community about. Mr. Bagley apparently was under arrest for something else when he was hit several times. He sued the police department and settled with the city of Shreveport. And some people who we were talking to were actually telling us they believe this police department needs to be looked into because they are worried that some of these officers are not facing enough discipline. Anderson, I want to highlight this fact here. It was other police officers who talked to me while I was in that town who said that we needed to do this open records request because they were concerned that everything they've seen in this file needed to be exposed to the public.
Ryan Young, appreciate it. Thanks. Really incredible and frankly kind of creepy report from our Donnie O'Sullivan is next. It involves artificial intelligence, deep fakes, and apparently me. We've come here to UC Berkeley today to talk to Hani Farid, a digital forensic expert, about just how easy it is to put words into other people's mouths. I'm not exactly sure whose voice that was, but it wasn't Donnie O'Sullivan's. More on that ahead. So deepfake technology is incredible. It's brought us lifelike versions of Tom Cruise doing coin tricks. You've probably seen Jerry Seinfeld co-starring in Pulp Fiction. It can be amusing and funny. It can also be really creepy and dark. As our Donnie O'Sullivan has previously reported, the technology has been turned against women to make revenge porn. U.S. intelligence has warned about the potential threat to national security posed by deepfakes. Tonight, Donnie is back with a look at how AI can fake our own voices, including my own.
Hello?
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Donnie. How are you?
Does my voice sound different to you?
Yeah, I just said that to Sinead. I said, Donnie sounds so American.
This is not actually me. This is a voice made by computer.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Yeah, Mom. Sorry. There has been an explosion in fake audio and voices being generated through artificial intelligence technology.
This is an AI-cloned version of Walter White's voice.
This is an AI-cloned version of Leonardo DiCaprio's voice.
All you need is a couple of minutes recording of anyone's voice, and you can make it seem like they have said just about anything, even
Anderson Cooper. We've come here to UC Berkeley today to talk to Hani Farid, a digital forensic expert, about just how easy it is to put words into other people's mouths.
It's a lot of fun.
Sure.
But it's also really scary.
I think once you put aside that gee whiz factor, I don't think it takes a long time to look at the risks.
This is Wolf Blitzer. Hani Farid, you are in the Situation Room.
That sounds good. That sounds pretty good.
By uploading just a few minutes of me and some of my colleagues' voices to an AI audio service, I was able to create some convincing fakes, including this one of Anderson Cooper.
Donnie O'Sullivan is a real piece of shit.
That's AI.
Is it really?
That's AI.
That's good.
Yeah, Anderson is really good.
Man.
Because Anderson doesn't have a stupid Irish accent.
The technology did struggle with my Irish accent, but we decided to put it to the ultimate test with my parents.
I am about to try call my mom back in Ireland and see if I can trick her with this voice.
Yeah.
Think I'm going to be successful?
I'm nervous. I'm like, my hands are.
All right.
Hello?
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Donnie. How are you?
Just finished shooting our story here. I'm going to the airport in a while.
There seems to be a delay in the phone, Donnie.
Can I say a quick hello to Dad?
Yep. Hi, Donnie.
Hi, Dad.
How are you, Dad?
How are you?
Good yourself?
Just finished shooting our story here. I'm going to the airport in a while.
How are you? Oh, you'll come back. You'll come back again earlier.
Are Kerry playing this weekend?
They're playing Taiwan Center.
My dad went on to have a conversation with the AI Donnie about how Kerry, our home football team, had a game that weekend. Eventually, I had to come clean.
Dad, I'll give you a call better later on. Could you just put me back on to Mom for a second?
My parents knew something was off, but ultimately they still fell for it.
Oh, yes. Some of it don't be bad, but it was like your voice was a little tone lower and it sounded very serious.
Yeah.
Like you were something serious to say. Because I went, oh, geez, my heart was hopping first.
Oh, sorry.
The voice is very funny. The voice is very funny, yeah.
All right.
I'll
call you later, Dad.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Is this not classic? The mom is like, something's wrong with my son. The dad's like, everything's fine.
I'd like to close out today's ceremony with a question. If you were given a choice, would you choose to have unlimited bacon but no more video games?
With fake Biden and Trump recordings going viral online, Fareed says this could be something to be wary of going into the 2024 election.
When we enter this world where anything can be fake, any image, any audio, any video, any piece of text, nothing has to be real. We have what's called the liar's dividend, which is anybody can deny reality.
With a flood of new AI tools releasing online, he says companies developing this powerful technology need to think of its potential negative effects.
There is no online and offline world. There's one world, and it's fully integrated. When things happen on the internet, they have real implications for individuals, for communities, for societies, for democracies. And I don't think we as a field have fully come to grips with our responsibility here.
In the meantime, I'll continue annoying my colleagues.
Hear this thing Anderson said.
I've been doing this a long time. I have to say, Donny O'Sullivan is probably the best in the business.
Incredible. It's really good. It's very kind of him to say that.
It's really,
you know, you should be honored, really.
I would never say that. No, you are. I mean, this is fascinating to me. It's amazing. It's funny. It is also scary. I mean, as you point out in that piece, you could take somebody's voice, call your mom, mm-hmm. and you know, have some scam against her, saying you were in trouble and needed you to wire money immediately.
Yeah, I mean, my parents are never going to believe
I
when
your
I pick
parents.
Up the
they
phone.
They were so sweet.
Up the phone to them again, they'll be like, "Is this really Donny?" But look, you know, we had a bit of fun with it there. But this technology is so crazy powerful. To create the deepfake of you, we only needed a minute or two of audio.
That's incredible.
And you could immediately start typing, putting words in your mouth.
Yeah.
Look, obviously, as we go into 2024 election, think about the role that audio has played in previous campaigns. Yeah. The Access Hollywood tape, the Romney tape, the percentage, and even the kind of the Watergate tapes, all that sort of stuff, as well as just, as you mentioned, the kind of scams, tricking people. Vice did a report where they were able to break into a bank account that had a voice.
I think technology. Of it from a perspective of somebody who has died and a loved one who wants to hear their, you know, their loved one's voice and even, you know, commune with them. That's the potential in the future.
That would be easy to do now. And as well with something like ChatGPT, where you could mimic what they would say, put the two of them together.
Yeah. It's incredible. Donny O'Sullivan, thanks so much. Thanks. Just ahead, scary incidents like this on a United Airlines flight this week, plus a series of collisions and near collisions this year, focus attention on how safe airline travel is. We asked Harry Enten to come and show us some numbers to see if there's reason to be concerned. We'll be right back. The United Airlines passenger arrested this week for threatening to stab a flight attendant in the neck during a flight from L.A. to Boston was just one of several scary moments aboard a flight in the last week.
Well, tell them to Freak Squad to shoot me down because they're going to have to shoot me down today. Remember that. Where are they diverting us? Because wherever it is, there's going to be a bloodbath everywhere. You can run away. You can all run away if you want. If you're men, you can run. I won't kill you. I'm Balthazar.
That is a nightmare. The 33-year-old man is accused of trying to open the emergency door mid-flight. Also this week, a Southwest flight out of Havana had to return minutes after takeoff because of a bird strike that caused an explosion that sent smoke into the cabin. There was also a mid-air collision between two small planes in Florida. Four people died. And then there was the tarmac collision at Boston Logan between two United Airlines planes. The right wing of one plane struck the tail of another. And in Connecticut, one person aboard a private jet died after the plane experienced severe turbulence. The head of a pilots union today said that after six recent near plane collisions, the system is, quote, under stress. Joining us to try to make sense of the numbers on this to see if there's a trend here, our senior data reporter Harry Enten joins us. So what does the data show?
Yeah, so look, the FAA is essentially, you know, the official data only goes through the end of January. But we know that there were three of these, quote, unquote, near collisions, right? The significant potential for an accident. Now, look at the trend going back to five prior years. How many, essentially, of those near accidents occurred per month? 0.4. So we're looking at something between about 8 and 9 times the normal number. And of course, in February and in March, we've had 3 or 4 more that haven't been graded yet by the FAA. Mm-hmm. But the trend line seems to be continuing. So it's not just our
imagination. But is that a trend line just based on the month of January?
It's a trend line based on the month of January, but it also seems like a trend line based on the month of February, right? If we had just had January, I wouldn't be sitting here with you. But based upon what we're seeing in February, it looks like we're seeing a continuation of the trend that started in January.
What about turbulence?
Yeah, so turbulence, obviously, you know, we've had some scary stuff that's been going on. And, you know, the data on that's a little bit trickier to understand. But we have tracked turbulence from 2009 to 2021 on commercial airlines. And we know that the sort of, quote unquote, serious injuries were about 2.3 per year. Mm-hmm. Then look at look at December of 2022. There were 11 serious injuries on just one Hawaiian flight. And then in March of 2023, we had 7 hospitalizations on just one Lufthansa flight. So we are running well ahead of the sort of normal average that we would be expecting per year in just one incident in December and potentially another one in March, though those were hospitalizations, not necessarily serious injuries.
Also, those were just one flight.
Yeah. This is one flight in which you had 11 serious injuries versus 2.3 per year. So we're talking about one flight covering, what is that? That's more than five times or four times the amount that you'd see in a year normally.
On the close calls, why would there be more close calls in January and maybe even?
Yeah, I think there are essentially two things that are going on here. Number one, we're seeing a lot more air travel than we're used to over the last few years, right? We had the COVID pandemic. Airlines weren't out and about as much. And if you look right now at the number of airline passengers that we're seeing, we're basically back to pre-pandemic levels. So that's one thing that's going on. But the second thing that's going on is we have a lot of new pilots who aren't necessarily trained on sort of these busy runways that we used to see, especially pre-pandemic.
And the unruly passenger incidents, what are the numbers show?
Yeah, so this is the one bit of good news, right? I feel like I've been doom and gloom all this segment, which is not my natural state of being, but the numbers are the numbers.
Really?
And I knew. Who knew, right? I like to be jovial, right? Okay. So I do have good news, which is we have not had a single fatality this year. We haven't had a single airline fatality on a commercial airline flight since 2020. And more than that, the number of unruly passengers, we've actually had a below average number. So yes, there are these incidents that are scary, but the fact is the numbers show we're actually pretty much in line, if not below line, on that particular metric.
Well, that is good. Harry Anton, I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, sir.
We'll be right back. Or perhaps you've seen the little gizmo on screen all day. There it is there. It's right there in the bottom right of your screen, promoting Will Plitzer's interview with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Time has now arrived. The CNN primetime special, the Zelensky interview hosted by Will Plitzer, starts now.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country. Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.